Kaffee in seiner besten Form mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Chibo. In jeder Cubo-Kapsel steckt Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Für Espresso, Kaffeecrema oder Kaffee Grande auf Knopfdruck. Die neue Cubo One überzeugt mit Premium-Design, kompakter Größe und kleinem Einstiegspreis ab 29 Euro. Dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie wird jede Tasse besonders aromatisch mit samtiger Crema. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo-Kapselmaschinen in deiner Chibo-Filiale und auf chibo.de.
Stu does America.
Follow the show over on YouTube, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Be sure to hit the subscribe button and click the bell as well for notifications. We are here. It's a brand new year. Excited to be here with you. Jason Buttrill is going to join us with the latest out of Venezuela and the White House. Tim Walz has made a very timely decision, perhaps many, many years actually too late, about his career. We will go over that. But we're going to start by doing the capture of Maduro. What a freaking weekend. I was sure I was going to do a different monologue for you. Coming back here on Monday, because I have one in mind. We're going to probably do that one later in this week. I'll give you a little tease to it here in just a second. But it is it's a situation where it's not all that often you get to do a show right after the United States has decided to go into another country and take the president and his wife out and bring them to New York for trial. That's not common. I think we could have done it after Noriega. Not sure there's many other opportunities to talk about that particular thing, so let's dive into it. Maduro pleading not guilty to federal drug trafficking charges, of course. You get the perp walk, which is lots of fun. Here he is walking. Oh, look at this. Here he comes, looking super hot and sexy as he makes his way through. Before, he's not wearing his Nike jogging suit anymore. Nice commercial for Nike, by the way. He was wearing a Nike jogging suit when they took the initial picture of him. And you're just like, yeah, it's better than Jonestown and Kool-Aid. Even though it wasn't Kool-Aid, by the way, it was Flavor-Aid. No one remembers that. But just so you know, not all product tie-ins are positive. We know a lot about this raid, and it's really, really fascinating, honestly. New York Times has a piece, what we know about Maduro's capture and the fallout. United States carried out a large-scale strike against Venezuela, in which Mr. Maduro and his wife, Celia Flores, were captured. The mission involved 150 aircraft that worked to dismantle Venezuelan air defenses so military helicopters could deliver troops to Caracas. That's how you have to say it now. It's definitely not Caracas. It's Caracas. It's the country's capital, as you may know. The mission took about 2 hours and 20 minutes and continued into early Saturday when Mr. Maduro and Ms. Flores gave up. The U.S. forces encountered significant resistance. Mr. Trump said at least 80 people were killed, including military personnel and civilians, according to a senior Venezuelan official. No Americans were killed, thank God. Mr. Trump said to U.S. officials speaking on the condition of anonymity, said there about a half dozen soldiers were injured in the operation. All really, really fascinating stuff. And just what they did here. I'm going to talk to Jason Buttrill in a little bit about the details of how they did this and how difficult it would be to do this. You know, some people were just like very perplexed of why we didn't just do more. That was the situation with Margaret Brennan. And Marco Rubio broke this one down for her.
I'm confused. Are they still wanted by the United States? Why didn't you arrest them if you are taking out the narco-terrorist regime?
You're confused? I don't know why that's confusing to
They're
you.
They're still in power.
It's very simple. You're not going to go in and wrap up. You're going to go in and suck up five people. They're already complaining about this one operation. Imagine the howls we would have from everybody else if we actually had to go and stay there 4 days to capture four other people. We got the top priority. The number one person on the list was the guy who claimed to be the president of the country that he was not. And he was arrested along with his wife, who was also indicted. And that was a pretty sophisticated and frankly complicated operation.
It was.
It is not easy to land helicopters in the middle of the largest military base in the country. The guy lived on a military base. Land within 3 minutes, kick down his door, grab him, put him in handcuffs, read him his rights, put him in a helicopter, and leave the country without losing any American or any American assets. That's not an easy mission. And you're asking me why didn't we do that in five other places at the same time? I mean, that's absurd.
The others who were also indicted are still in place. So that's the point of my questioning there. But you talked about not being the legitimate
president.
So you wanted
us to land in five other military bases?
No, I'm asking why you chose that this was the limit of the military operation. But to your point that you just made, that Maduro was not the legitimate president.
He was the guy who was claiming to be the president.
Right. Well, the opposition.
He was a top target.
I mean, it's one of those things that she had to get halfway through that question, and especially when his answer began, she's like, "Oh God, that was stupid. Why did I ask that?" Maybe not. I honestly, with the media the way it is, maybe she didn't have that realization. Very difficult operation to do it five times in the same country at the same time would be really, really hard. And that's why you went after the top target, took out the top target. And of course, this is a very typical military approach, right? If you can get rid of that top of the triangle, if you will, top of the food chain, there's a good chance that everybody falls in line under it. If they can do that with Maduro, what can they do to me? And that usually changes a lot of minds, not only, by the way, in Venezuela, but in our in the countries of our other enemies. Many of them all of a sudden might find some ability to work with us on certain items after seeing something like this. An incredible operation. I mean, it's hard to even overstate how amazing this was from a military perspective. There's a lot more to this story than just that, but that is something to just stand in awe of. I mean, the fact that we are able to grow old in a country that is protected by people like this is something you should cherish, frankly. These people are able to do things that you and I probably, I mean, maybe you're a military member and you don't think this way, but I do. The fact that they can do things that I can't even dream of doing. I can't even dream of having the bravery to do what these guys do on a regular basis. It's freaking incredible. Trump says U.S. is in charge of Venezuela, while Rubio stresses coercing it. It's an interesting back and forth, and this is very typical of the Trump administration and the Trump presidency, if you've watched it all these years. A lot of times you get Trump kind of saying this, you know, blunt thing, hey, we're right in the country, and then you get it kind of walked back a little bit by other people who are more involved in the details of the situation, right? Trump is looking at this from a big picture perspective, usually, and depending on people like Marco Rubio to make sure all that stuff goes smoothly. Here's Rubio talking about it with NBC News.
If the purpose of the operation was to capture Maduro and bring him to justice, why does the United States need to take over the Venezuelan oil industry?
Well, we don't need to. First of all, let me go back up. We don't need Venezuela's oil. We have plenty of oil in the United States. What we're not going to allow is for the oil industry in Venezuela to be controlled by adversaries of the United States. You have to understand, why does China need their oil? Why does Russia need their oil? Why does Iran need their oil? They're not even in this continent. This is the Western Hemisphere. This is where we live. And we're not going to allow the Western Hemisphere to be a base of operation for adversaries, competitors, and rivals of the United States.
Have specific oil companies.
We also want to see that oil and the proceeds from it. Hold on. We want to see the oil proceeds of that country benefit the people of Venezuela. Why have 8 million people left Venezuela? 8 million, the single largest mass migration probably in modern history, left Venezuela since 2014 because all the wealth of that country was stolen to the benefit of Maduro and his cronies and the regime, but not to the benefit of people of Venezuela. You know how destabilizing 8 million migrants is? The number one fear that Brazil has, that Colombia has, that all these countries in the region have about what's happening in Venezuela and our involvement is they're afraid of another mass migration event. That's what they fear. This is deeply destabilizing stuff. It's not going to continue to happen. They are not going to come from outside of our hemisphere, destabilize our region in our own backyard, and us have to pay the price for it, not under President Trump.
So much to talk about there. Number one, broadcasters. You happen to be on NBC News, ABC, CBS. Sometime there's a delay in your interview. And if you say things and then you start keep going as if he's not responding, he's going to respond late. This should be basic stuff. You should know it by now. So that's number one. Number two is the key word of the day. This is going to be very important for us to understand the approach of the Trump administration here is hemisphere. That is a big deal right now in the mind of Donald Trump and the mind of the officials around him. And this goes back, they're now calling it the Monroe Doctrine. You may have heard that. This goes back to the Monroe Doctrine from back in the day, 1820s, where James Monroe was saying basically, hey, no, you're not, we've had enough. It started in, 1823. He made a speech, basically said, look, I know you've been doing this colonization thing, Europe. You've got a lot of that going on in our hemisphere. No more. Whatever you have now, fine, but no more from here. That was sort of expanded under Theodore Roosevelt, who did what they call the Roosevelt Corollary. This was basically to say, okay, we're going to actually make sure we're shutting down what is out there, right? Like, so it's not just no more additional we're going to stop everything that's going on down there. And that this is pretty similar to what Trump seems to be doing, the Roosevelt corollary of the Monroe Doctrine. Then you went from after that to the FDR good neighbor policy, where we were super nice to everybody. As is typical with that approach, didn't exactly work, did not hold things together. Then we got into the Cold War, where, of course, our Cold War enemies, the Russias of the world, were implanting all sorts of nonsense in this region. We had to step up again through Reagan and, of course, even going back to the Cuban Missile Crisis. All that's going on through that concept. We get into the post-Cold War era, past the 90s, the wall comes down, Soviet Union is gone. Well, the Cold War stuff is gone. Now what do we do? Well, we tried to expand trade to the region. Obama came in and was like, hey, we're just going to be super nice to Cuba and hope everything is great. That whole partnership era has died down now to what we're seeing now, the new Monroe Doctrine, which is, again, we're kind of going back to the Roosevelt era of this, is saying, like, we're not going to let you have influence in our hemisphere. You take your hemisphere, we're going to take ours. So stay out of our business. That's where it seems to be right now with Donald Trump. He's been trying to expand this a little bit more. Let's see, which one do we have? Let me go to this one here. Let me give you a quick sense, because a big part of the allegations against Trump here is he just wants the oil. It's war for oil. I mean, this is, step one out of the playbook of the Democrats to just say everything's about oil. A Venezuelan was asked about this. Does the United States only want oil out of your country? And here's what he said. Says, to those who say the United States is only interested in our oil, I ask those people, what do you think the Russians and the Chinese wanted? The recipe for arepas? Now, I will say, I love that. By the way, arepas, very delicious, very tasty delicacy from Venezuela. And somewhat, just to know what the social media era that we all live in, this is exactly what happened. That whole clip happens. What do they want, the recipe for arepas? Then someone just asked Grok what the recipe for arepas is. And here it is. You don't need to invade anywhere to get it. Basically, I remember the first time I ever had arepas was at the Miami stadium, the football stadium in Miami, and they had them. There was some musical act playing, and I was like, I don't want to hear them. So I went out and at the halftime situation, and I went out to the arepa stand, and I got one, and it was basically the best thing I've ever had in my entire life. And then I went back out to get a second one, and I wanted to die. The limit is one. I don't know what it was. I thought it was the end of my life having the second arepa. So this was my recommendation if you ever have arepas. Yourself. Okay, so it's an interesting approach here, because what we're seeing from the Democrats is a total reversal to what what they were saying beforehand. Let me give you a taste of what they used to say before they started coming out against this, because obviously Donald Trump has done it, so therefore it's bad. They're all against it. They're all upset about it. They can't believe he would do such a thing. Here's where they were not that long ago. Chuck Schumer in 2020.
He brags about all these things he wants to do or is doing, but his actions belie his words. Maybe the best metaphor was his claim to bring democracy to Venezuela. There was a big policy there. It flopped. If the policy was working, Juan Guaido wouldn't be in the balcony here. He'd be in Venezuela. He'd be sitting in the president's palace, or at least waging a fight to win. He's here. And the president brags about his Venezuela policy? Give us a break. He hasn't brought an end to the Maduro regime. The Maduro regime is more powerful today and more entrenched today than it was when the president began.
Now, of course, they did have an effort to get Maduro out back in 2019, 2020. It was written about extensively at the time. It did not wind up successfully getting in the chosen candidate. So you might say, okay, well, it didn't work then. This is a new policy. Maybe he'll admit that it worked this time. Of course, that's not true. Chris Murphy's another one that was running his mouth about this, and this one's from 2024. So this is super duper recent. Here's Chris Murphy running his mouth.
So over the past decade, Nicolas Maduro, the brutal dictator of Venezuela, has presided over a stunning collapse of the Venezuelan economy that has caused nearly 8 million Venezuelans to leave that country, most of which destined for the United States. Part of the reason why we saw 10,000 people showing up at the border every day last year, a number that the United States just can't handle with current resources, because of the meltdown of the Venezuelan economy.
And so socialism.
It's no surprise that in the election that was held this week, Maduro clearly lost. The briefings that I've received today suggest that Maduro not only lost, he probably lost in a landslide and is attempting, as we speak, to steal the election. If he's successful, not only will Venezuela continue to spiral into political and economic chaos, but you will see more people come to the southern border. Maduro is now in a corner. We're working with our allies and our partners in the region to try to force them to accept the results of this election.
Now, of course, you may know that, of course, Maduro did not accept those election results. He wound up staying in office. And now that he's out and he's being prosecuted for his crimes, Chris Murphy is on the opposite side of that. And now he's very much in favor of criticizing Donald Trump over the removal. So he wanted, I mean, just can't do what he's doing there, apparently. Mom Donnie chimed in on this as well. Here he is. In a shocking part at the beginning of this, apparently Donald Trump's still taking Mom Donnie's calls for some reason. Listen.
I called the president and spoke with him directly to register my opposition to this act and to make clear that it was an opposition based on being opposed to a pursuit of regime change, to the violation of federal international law, and a desire to see that be consistent each and every day.
Now, of course, Mom Donnie is against the removal of Maduro because he is Maduro. It's the same guy. He's trying to do the same thing to our country that Maduro was doing in Venezuela. He has the same policies. This is the exact type of thing that Mamdani wants to bring to the United States. And he's going to start with New York City. And he, by the way, I was talking about a monologue I want to do earlier this week. I'm going to give you one for sure on this particular part of the Mamdani speech that I'm sure you heard, but is worth focusing on a little bit more. Listen.
We will draw this city closer together.
Yeah, sure you will.
We will replace the frigidity of rugged individualism with the warmth of collectivism.
The warmth.
If our campaign demonstrated that the people of New York yearn for solidarity, then let this government foster it. Because no matter what you eat, how you pray, or where you come from, the words that most define us are the two we all share: New Yorkers.
Legitimately, how did anyone fall for this? It is absolutely incredible that anyone would fall for something like this. Anyway, the frigidity of rugged individualism, of course, is what built this country. And the warmth of collectivism is what built the one that just had their leader removed by a bunch of our military members. And just to give you an illustration of that, let me give you this quick chart. This is my favorite part of the entire show, by the way. This chart, a chart of Palooza in action, GDP per capita for a couple of countries, Poland and Venezuela. And what you see is Venezuela very much ahead of Poland all the way up until, around late 80s, early 90s. What happened there? Well, of course, Poland got rid of communism, and you see the GDP of the country skyrocket from there. You see a flat GDP throughout from like 1980 up until about 2010 or so. I can't remember the exact date, but it's right in that general vicinity. And that's when, of course, Chavez comes in and he implements socialism. And then you see the GDP collapse. It is the story of every single thing we talk about all the time. And it is really, really important. And maybe we'll get into that a little bit more in depth later on this week. So what's next? After Maduro, Trump spurs speculation about his plans for Greenland. Obviously, Greenland's the next step. Cuba and Colombia. President Donald Trump said on Sunday, renewed his calls for American takeover of the Danish territory of Greenland for the sake of U.S. security interests and threatened military action on Colombia for facilitating the global sale of cocaine. While his top diplomat declared the communist government in Cuba is in a lot of trouble. With thinly veiled threats, Trump is rattling hemispheric friends and foes alike, spurring a pointed question around the world, who is next? Now, of course, there's different parts of this. You know, when you talk about Cuba, You have an ideological socialist regime, right? You know, when you watch it, let me speak to people who maybe don't like Donald Trump that much for a second. When you watch Marco Rubio say a bunch of things that you're like, he can't possibly believe that. I can't believe he's defending this Trump policy. I can't believe he's just, you know, saying the words that Trump wants him to say. He won't even criticize him at all. What happened to him? If you want to know what happened to him, remember this. Remember what happened in Venezuela. These are the types of things. He's doing that stuff that you don't like because he wants this. He believes in this. He believes in what's happened in Venezuela and what might happen in Cuba. It's massively important to him, and he will eat crap on TV over and over and over and over again to get those results. That is what's happening with Marco Rubio. He really, really believes this stuff. So you have that going on. Colombia is a much better example of what's going on with the drug trade than Venezuela is. It's a much bigger piece of the puzzle when it comes to the United States. Again, you know, it's an interesting balance. Because, you know, Cuba, for example, had 32 of its soldiers killed in this. They were protecting Maduro, had 32 killed. That is a significant thing, you know, because the problem here with this is not Maduro leaving. I'm thrilled with Maduro being out of there. I'm glad that the Venezuela people finally have a path to some sort of life in that country. And they do have that. We'll see what they do with it. It's always a risk. But there's all sorts of externalities that you can't. You know, you don't know what's coming. I mean, obviously, we had intelligence. We probably knew the Cubans were there, certainly protecting the president, killing 32 of them. What if some of them were Chinese? What if some of them were Russian? Things could have gone into a totally different world. We don't know. Things went really well so far. But Donald Trump will be judged on this, not based on how day one went. He will be judged on this based on how this all turns out. And that is going to be a very difficult road ahead. And it's something that we can't just kind of go in there, chop off the head of the Venezuelan government, and then cross our fingers and hope. We're going to have to be involved at some level. Hopefully, they can get to a place where they actually have some freedom, a chance, something that they're actually provided. Because I will say, for a very long time, they haven't had that opportunity. Ever since Chavez got in there, this has been a sour, sour path. And this is something that we have a chance to turn around. And hopefully the Venezuelan people get to a place where they don't want to escape their own country and come across our borders. They want freedom and they want a chance to be able to paint their own future. And I don't know that's going to happen. It's going to be, as we've seen many times, these efforts are often well-meaning and often don't wind up working out all that well. I hope this one's different because this one is in our hemisphere and the repercussions are serious. But there's a much bigger strategic plan here that the president is trying to implement. And that affects not only this hemisphere, but the entire globe. We'll get into that with Jason Buttrell next. One of the things I like about Prize Picks, by the way, the Philadelphia Eagles, they could have been a 2-seed, but they're a 3-seed, and we'll accept that. After winning a Super Bowl, everything's okay still in the world until they lose. I love Prize Picks, though, because I can go to any game, really, and it is super simple to get started without feeling overwhelmed. If you're not a big, you know, fantasy player, you've never really done this before, Prize Picks is for you because the whole experience is built around making lineups based on player projections. So you're not dealing with drafts or long-term commitments or anything overly complicated. You just pick whether players will do more or less in the stats that you're already paying attention to while watching games, and that's kind of it. Right? Passing yards, passing touchdowns, rushing yards, completions, all these things. And you're already, you know, going to be following these players anyway, probably watching the games, especially as we get into the playoffs. But having your own lineup gives you a way to kind of lock in. Maybe the game's not even that great. Maybe it's a blowout. It matters to you because you're looking at that Prize Picks lineup and trying to make some extra cash. And you can. Prize Picks has all sorts of great features to help you do that. They have early payouts. So if your player gets off to a strong start, you don't want to risk it. You got the flexibility built right into the experience. They've got social features so you can see what other people are building. And you can just copy their lineups. If you think, oh, that guy's smart, I'm going to copy his lineup. You can do that really easily. Or you can use it to just kind of build off of. Download the Prize Picks app today. Use the code STU. You get $50 in lineups after you play the first $5 lineup. The code is STU. Get $50 in lineups after you play only $5. It's Prize Picks, and it's good to be right.
Meditieren, Yoga, Joggen, nichts entspannt mich.
Echt? Mich entspannt meine Steuer total.
Steuer? Wie Finanzamt? Die Steuererklärung?
Ja, ich habe ganz locker über 1000 Euro zurückbekommen.
Hast du geheime Connections?
Nö, nur die Wieso-Steuer-App.
Wow, und das ist einfach?
Klar, die macht fast alles automatisch.
Plötzlich fühle ich mich so entspannt.
Hol dir dein Geld zurück. Tiefenentspannt mit Wieso Steuer.
Joined now by Jason Buttrell, head writer and researcher for Glenn Beck, and a host of a cool new thing as part of Glenn's new venture, The Torch. I want to get into that. I want to get into Venezuela here in a second, but let's start with The Torch, because this thing launched today. The amount of work that's gone into this behind the scenes has been absolutely incredible. You guys have been like just churning away at this for months and months and months and months. What was day one like for you?
Oh my gosh. Let me give you even more insider information. We'll go back 48 hours and I'm on like 17,000 text threads.
Yes.
And everyone's screaming in all caps, "It's not working! Help!" Everyone's trying to get the site ready, upload stuff. Stuff's going in there. It's out of order. It's garbled, all this stuff. And yeah. I don't know how. I rolled in early this morning, and Glenn's face looks white and he's sweating. And I'm like, "Did we make it?" And he's like, "You tell me." And I started checking around. Somehow they pulled off most of the features by this morning. It was pretty amazing. But there's still a few kinks to work out. We're still, working through some George AI, Glenn AI stuff, and some of that will be uploaded actually later today. But I gave a preview for it today on the feed. It's pretty cool stuff. But yeah, it was a whole lot of fun. To me, it's crazy because I listen to a lot of radio, and the most annoying thing on radio is when, you stop hearing what the hosts are talking about because it's an interesting conversation, and then you go to, pick random, commercial.
Yeah, yeah.
And then that's the next 10 minutes of your drive. At that point, you're already pulling into work, and you miss, when they pick up the next conversation.
Sure.
Well, on this, it's cool because I'm talking directly to the audience. I'm continuing what you guys are still talking about, maybe adding a little more context from something Glenn did 10 years ago on it and talking about that. And then also giving inside, like a behind the scenes look, showing what Glenn does in between the breaks. He runs in like he did today and started choking me out for some random reason.
That was, you're a former military member. Like, I don't think he's very soft and I don't think the type of interaction he wants in reality.
Torch Insiders, if you're watching, he's going down tomorrow. Yeah. I ain't putting up with that tomorrow. He's going down. But no, it's a whole lot of fun.
Okay, so let's quickly, for people who don't understand, Glenn's talked a little bit about it, but this is the first day really the whole thing is open and ready to go. You go to glenbeck.com. This is where you get involved in it right now. Go to glenbeck.com. Upper right hand corner, there's like a login, sign up, or play thing.
Which is completely open right now.
Completely open. So go there and you can sign up. And you don't need a credit card, you don't need anything like that. It's just your email address, or you can do Google or Apple sign in, so really easy. You get in there, and what's the experience like? What are you getting?
So there's a ton of new content on there. Glenn's been producing a lot of the Torch content for months now. There's multiple different podcasts in serialized format. So if you want, it's like Netflix. If you want to like binge, there's one podcast. It's all about like the American story and history.
Yeah, he played a little bit of that on radio today.
Multiple different episodes. You don't have to wait. You can just go all the way through the season if you want to. Super cool. You're going to spend hours on that because you're not going to be able to stop.
It's like a history podcast, fully produced, all new, brand new material from Glenn is up there if you sign in. What else?
There's another podcast, serialized podcast. It's called Days of Ash, that you can go and watch that.
That's a fiction story,
it's,
right?
It's fictional.
Kind of.
Yeah, it's basically like, kind of like when the economy collapses and everything goes to hell.
It's right in the Glenn Beck brand.
Totally.
You're at glennbeck.com.
You're right.
See something called Days of Ash.
We call it a podcast, but you're actually looking directly into his brain.
That's
the tech we've been building.
Yep.
But there's those podcasts. There's other shows. There's a TV special that's on there about capital controls, which what does that even mean? Like, exactly. That's why we did a TV show for it, because it's a very obscure economic term, but it's a very, very serious and scary outcome if you ever start hearing certain things. But Glenn's going to goes through that in the show and says, when you start hearing this, when you start hearing that, well, then we might see capital controls coming, and this is what that means for you and your family. All the typical stuff that, educational, dot connecting type things that you've come to love and expect from Glenn, all right now, on glennbeck.com, through glenbeck.com through the torch. You can watch all of that stuff right now. You can just go sign up, no credit card, and just start watching it. But it's a little taste of the types of content we're going to be providing. Some of the stuff, like Glenn's going to be doing quarterly specials, what we're calling deep dives at the moment, but I'm not sure that the branding might change. But these are going to be multiple hour-long specials of Glenn up at Chalkboards, Glenn on location, Glenn doing a bunch of other stuff. We're working on one right now, which I'll tell your audience is about the Islamification of the West in the United States. But I'm talking about going crazy deep into it. Who's funding it? Who's a part of it? Where does it go from here? How do we stop it? It's amazing. The research team that we have on it is a crack team. They've already uncovered stuff, including things that we're going to reveal to tease coming up this week. We're going to release a little bit of that. And it's significant enough that we think we're going to deliver straight to the FBI and DOJ so that we can get some movement on it. So that's the kind of stuff we're looking at.
Very cool.
It's exciting.
It's at glenbeck.com, the torch. You can just sign up there. And you should know also, if you're a Blaze TV subscriber, you still get the radio show every day. Nothing will be changing at all on that. That's just an additional thing. If you want even more Glenn, if you can take even more Glenn, you can go to glenbeck.com. But you'll be getting, of course, the radio show right here on Blaze TV going forward as well. So. Let me switch gears and go back to actually the gear we were in before, which was Venezuela. You watched all this happen over the weekend.
Amazing.
An amazing military operation. Let me start with that part of it, because like I could sit here and like dissect the global politics and have my opinions on it. But just as a thing that was done, how difficult was this? Would this be to accomplish to get Maduro out of that sort of situation?
Stu, unprecedented. Glenn mentioned today on radio that, you know, we talk about the Six-Day War and how amazing that was between Israel and all the Arab nations. Well, this is effectively the two-hour war. And, I mean, no one, I don't think, has ever pulled something like this off, especially not with modern defensive capabilities within a country. That's something that wasn't wildly known, is that the air defense radars and early detection systems, those were Chinese. The Chinese went in and installed that. They probably had Chinese, you know, technicians on the ground to make sure that everything was being maintained and all that. There was actually a Chinese delegation. That was the last public appearance of Maduro, was with that Chinese delegation. So they were probably still in town. The air defenses kinetically were Russian. S-300 missile systems, which that's not their brand new one, but that's still a very capable system. This was the hardest target to hit in South America because of all the attention the Chinese and Russians and the Cubans put into it. The target they hit was basically the Pentagon of Venezuela. That's how hardened the airspace and everything around it was.
Incredible.
But
he was living there knowing how much danger he was in, right? So they were prepared as much as they could have been prepared for this.
Yeah, he wasn't even staying like at that location for a long period of time just in case something happened. He was on the move constantly, moving to different locations, never sleeping in the same location twice. This story has not fully been told yet. We probably won't get it for a while. But, I mean, it must have started probably around August of last year. We first got word that CIA operations had been okayed inside Venezuela.
Bezahlen läuft für dich sowieso nur mit dem Handy? Dann hol dir doch was von deiner Kohle zurück. Denn in allen Restaurants und Bars gibt's jetzt 5% Cashback, wenn du mit PayPal zahlst. Tap dir mehr mit PayPal. Alle Infos gibt's auf paypal.de. 5% Cashback nur auf Einkäufe vor Ort in Restaurants und Bars in Deutschland bei kontaktloser Zahlung mit PayPal. Gültig vom 2. Juni bis 19. Juli 2026 für die ersten 850.000 berechtigten Kunden. Maximal 15 Euro Cashback pro Konto. Es gelten Bedingungen auf paypal.de.
The only way that this could have gone down was CIA operatives, actual agents, either parachuted in or inserted somehow. But their specific job was to begin tracking Maduro's movements, finding out where he goes every single day, where he goes to church, if he does go to church, you know, where he goes to the grocery store. You know, probably doesn't go to the grocery store, but, you know, all the different places he goes to.
Yeah. You have to have human intelligence, right?
Human intelligence.
Seeing that on a day-to-day basis.
They also, if reports are true, had an actual informant inside his inner circle, which, again, is amazing. Because, again, Cuban intelligence surrounds Maduro. Cuban intelligence was trained directly from the Soviet Union during the Cold War. They know what they're doing. And then Cuban intelligence also has intelligence sharing with Russia. So this is legitimate capability that was surrounding him.
He's going to make an incredible Mark Wahlberg movie.
Oh, totally.
It's definitely around the corner.
Totally.
talk to me about what Trump seemed to insinuate, which was a massive, I think, cyber attack.
Yeah, yeah.
What happened with this?
Okay. Yeah, so he mentioned, I don't know if it was him or if it was the Joint Chiefs, Raising Cain, that said, that specifically called out Space Command and Cyber Command. It was one of the others, but I remember Trump saying specifically, I think he said a capability that we have.
We had capable we happen to have.
Or yeah, with all the lights going out.
Yeah.
This is crazy because, I mean, I think the United States was probably the first country that just kind of, you know, created this watershed moment of cyber warfare with Stuxnet in Iran. And for the first time, you know, you were able to see that someone sitting in Virginia could press the enter button. And it's a little more complicated, but basically press the enter button in Virginia and cause physical damage in another country. We knocked out a bunch of centrifuges in Iran just from a computer program from cyber warfare. Mm. Well, this is another watershed moment to where, I mean, you saw how defiant Maduro was. He was like, come get me.
Yeah.
And why wouldn't he be defiant?
Public speeches about it.
Public speeches, you know, mocking, you know, and calling Trump out. But I mean, why wouldn't he? He had the Chinese on one side saying, here's all this early detection, all these early detection systems. He had the Russians on the other side saying, yeah, we got the missiles. Here you go. And he had Cuban intelligence trained by the Soviets that said, we got you, bro. And all of that stuff looked like it was purchased off of Temu at this point. I mean, if you're the Chinese and Russians, you're like, okay, I mean, crap. Maybe I should build a bunker, you know, and then go a lot deeper than Maduro is hiding. Because now they don't know. They do not know. But before the helicopters, before the planes flew, all that stuff, as they were going in, everything went out. And I don't know how extensive that was. Because, Stu, this is another point where I'm very iffy on this story. I think there's a whole lot more to this story that we're not being told. Because it's well known that Venezuela had thousands, I'm not sure how many thousands, but man-portable air defense systems. So you think like the Stinger missile,
yeah.
Or a guy, and it can knock out a helicopter. Well, helicopters get eaten up by man pads. And not a single man pad, I don't think, kicked off during that entire raid. That makes zero sense to me. When I was in the military, when we were planning ops in Afghanistan, if there was one suspected man pad, we would not fly helicopters within a couple miles of that area. We just flew directly through downtown Caracas.
I mean, we know some of the sourcing had to be from the inside, but do we think maybe there was just massive, there really was that insider sort of information and maybe some insider control over some of this?
Okay. So this is fun. This is fun.
Speculation mode.
Mm-hmm. I think two options. I think the first option is potentially there's just new tech out there. Either it was with cyber warfare or something on the helicopters that just nullified man pads. Mm-hmm. That's possible.
Yep.
I've never seen that. I don't know about it, but it's possible. Mm-hmm. The other one is that Maduro cut some kind of deal. Right after this raid happened, the opposition actually said, I think like social media or to the mainstream media, said that a negotiated deal had taken place and this was part of this. Mm. So it makes a whole lot of sense, especially if you're sitting back and you're like, if you're part of the war planners and part of Trump's cabinet, and you don't want a regime change to go the way of Libya or Iraq, a complete and total disaster. Well, how do you do that? You manage the landing. You make it a softer landing. Mm-hmm. So, and we know Maduro was negotiating with the Trump administration to leave. I'm curious why his wife went with him. That also seems very, very, to me, it seems very negotiated settlement to me.
It's interesting, though. You'd think if it was a negotiated settlement, they'd go to, like, Russia and not have to deal with consequences. But that could be something. I mean, that's a fascinating one, if that's true. Can I throw one more crazy theory? I know we're a little late, but one more crazy theory at you. And this one's going, I see this one bouncing around the left a little bit, but I found it to be at least somewhat entertaining to talk about, which was there's some testimony from one of the anti-Trump figures, Fiona, I want to say Fiona Apple. I don't think it was her. Could have been. And she would have worded it much more eloquently than anyone else. But it was Fiona Hill, thank you very much. And she had testimony, and in her testimony, she mentioned the possibility of a sort of negotiation that went on between Trump and Russia. Now, we all know a lot of that Russia stuff was nonsense. The theory, though, there was that Trump basically would say, you get out of Venezuela and we'll get out of Ukraine. Like, we'll stop influencing that. Now, this is before the war, right? So, like, you know, this is a different situation. But is there any thought of that possibility of us kind of saying, hey, we'll take our doctrines and we'll go home and we'll stay on our, I'll stay on our hemisphere, you stay on your hemisphere. And Russia was like, oh, we'll just make sure that you know exactly where he is and we'll make sure all those, you know, all the air defenses don't work that day.
I think that's crap.
Okay.
Okay. Because I don't think that Russia is not the largest player in Venezuela.
Yeah.
Venezuela was primarily a Chinese, Russia, Cuban, and Iranian thing.
So
they're not the big one. Mm-hmm. China has everything to lose with them, Xi Jinping would not care what Vladimir Putin said about Venezuela. He definitely wouldn't take his lead and get out of there because of Ukraine. Mm-hmm. China doesn't give a crap about Ukraine.
Well, I hope they don't pull this clip and then Fiona Apple responds to you. Her theory was bunk. Jason Buttrell, head writer, researcher for Glenn Beck, and host of the new, what are they calling the thing in the commercials?
Torch Insider Feed.
Torch Insider Feed. If you want to be a Torch Insider, go to glenbeck.com. Jason's going to be hosting the radio show during the commercials. Of course, if you're Blaze TV, stay here. We've got lots of great shows. And you still get the radio show on Blaze TV as well. Jason, thanks so much for coming on the program, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
A Paris court has found 10 people guilty of cyberbullying. Who? France's First Lady, Brigitte Macron. Really sensitive, she seems. Now, look, I can see, if you're a woman and people are calling you a dude all the time, I can see how you might be a little sensitive to that. I don't know if this is the right approach. Seems to be, if anything, elevating the people making these claims. I know that they have a big lawsuit in America as well based on this. We'll see if this affects that lawsuit. I don't think it will, really, in any way. But 8 men, 2 women, ranging in ages from 41 to 65, were accused of having posted numerous comments falsely claiming that she was a dude. At times we get upset with America, okay? You know, lines are long, okay? And, you know, you go to the drive-thru, the lines are long. Maybe you get the wrong order. Maybe they don't put the extra cheese sauce at Taco Bell that you ordered. Not saying this is a personal thing. I'm just saying this is a thing I think everyone can understand. But we do have a First Amendment, at least, that would protect us against that sort of nonsense, where the first lady of a country can sue you because you called her names. But that is apparently, we'll see. I guess we will see from here on out whether that holds out. Minnesota investigators say child care centers accused of fraud are operating normally. Of course, they've investigated themselves and found themselves to be wonderful. But it was so wonderful that Tim Walz is now dropping out of the governor race. And this is, I got to say, and you thought Somalis were not bringing wonderful outcomes to our country. Here's one they've provided free of charge. Well, maybe not free of charge. It costs maybe $9 billion. But worth it to get rid of Tim Walz. For me, at least. Now, I don't have to live in Minnesota, so I don't have to deal with, like, Amy Klobuchar or something as the next governor. You might say, well, Stu, that's not going to help us really at all. She's going to be just as bad as he was. And I'll say, yeah, but I don't have to watch his stupid face. So that's good. Although I'm sure a podcast is around the corner for Timmy. That one's coming next. Maybe an MS Now show. Can't wait for that one. So Tim Walz, out, gone, see you later, over the scandal that all he had to do was just make sure the law was actually respected. Of course, that's not something that liberals do very easily, as we've seen in San Francisco. If someone moves into your house, what happens when you're not there? Oh, they're just squatters. They have the rights to it now. Everything's going to be fine. You can't go really bother them. You have to just deal with them in your house. Unless you have, of course, ASAP squatter removal. A new capitalism at work in San Francisco. Yes, it still exists there. Sword-wielding man offers squatter removal service in Bay Area. Yes, ASAP squatter removal, a squatter removal service. You call them up when someone moves into your house. Hey, we went on vacation for a few weeks and came back. There's people living in our house. What do? We call ASAP. He comes over with his sword and guns and has not killed anybody yet. He just says, hey, you should really get out of this house right away. And it seems to work for some reason when just talking to the people doesn't work quite as well. So I'm very proud of this service. Hopefully there's no awry incidents that occur. But again, as Tim Walz might understand, if you just enforce the law, things just go a lot better. Okay. So here's what happened. I'm reading this police report from Salt Lake City, and it's about, you know, it's a transcript of an incident, you know, body cam footage or whatever. And police officer pulls over a guy, walks up to the car. They have this interaction, you know, driver's license and all that other thing. You know, typical stuff going on. Very, very normal interaction between a police officer and someone getting pulled over. And then a very strange thing happened in that the police officer turned into a frog. Now, that's not normally how these situations go. And how do we know that? Well, unfortunately, they were transcribing it using AI. And what was happening was when they were transcribing the audio of this incident, the Disney movie, The Princess and the Frog, was going on in the background. The AI heard both and meshed the stories, and then they had an official police report where a police officer turned into a frog, which, by the way, I would say is one of the least threatening things that a police officer could turn into. So at least it wasn't like a werewolf or something. So good job, SLC police.